exercise every day, finish a project around the house, or complete a college degree, you need a healthy dose of motivation. That same thing is true for forgiveness. So what should motivate you to forgive? Find out next on Grace to You. You've no doubt heard that one key to the learning process, probably the greatest key regardless of the subject, is to ask questions. And often the simple question like what, how, and why yield the most useful information. So John MacArthur is studying the topic of forgiveness, and we've seen the what and how of forgiveness, and today on Grace to You, John will get into the why of forgiveness. After the message, John will discuss his booklet, Answering the Hard Questions About Forgiveness. And to find out how you can get a copy of that, call 1-800-55-GRACE or visit gty.org. Right now, turn to the book of Philemon as John MacArthur begins today's lesson.
Forgiveness is a promise. That's really what it is. It's a promise. It's a promise never to take revenge. It is the opposite of a refusal to forgive, which is a promise to seek revenge. If you want a simple definition then of forgiveness, think of it as a promise never to take revenge. It is a verbally declared promise. It is a statement of love that affirms, I hold no anger, I hold no hatred, I hold no bitterness against you. And it has a threefold perspective. I won't ever bring it up to you. I won't ever bring it up to anybody else. I won't ever bring it up to myself. That's forgiveness. No matter what you have done to me, no matter how you have offended me, I make a promise never to seek revenge. I hold no anger. I hold no hatred. I hold no bitterness. I won't ever bring it up to you. I won't ever bring it up to anybody else. And I won't ever bring it up to me. That's forgiveness. Forgiveness, we have noted, is the most godlike and the most Christ-like act a Christian can do. Never are you more like God or Christ than when you forgive. Because that is what God does. That is what Christ does. Forgiveness is a magnificent virtue. Now, this wonderful little letter, without ever mentioning the word forgiveness, teaches us a living lesson in forgiveness. It teaches us some very essential elements of forgiveness in most gentle, most practical, and most subtle ways. Paul has already helped us to see and identify the kind of character one has to have to forgive. In verses 4 through 7, we indicated that if you are going to have the character of one who forgives, you will have a concern for the Lord, a concern for people, a concern for fellowship, a concern for knowledge, a concern for Christ's glory, and a concern for service. And all of that comes out of verses 4 to 7. Then, Paul also made us very aware not only of the character of one who forgives, but of the action of one who forgives. And we noted that there are three elements to that action. There is reception, then restoration, and then restitution. That's in verses 8 through 18. And then we come now to the final verses of this letter, verses 19 through 25. And Paul opens to us insight into the motives for forgiveness. Why forgive? What is the compelling, driving, internal motivation? Now, again, I remind you that all of these features that we've been looking at are subtle in this letter, but they are present. And they do give us a full description of one who forgives. What motivates someone to forgive? Certainly forgiveness is bold. Certainly forgiveness is brave. Certainly forgiveness is heroic. But at the same time, it should be normal for a humble Christian. So it is on the note of motives that Paul closes the letter with some gracious but pregnant words meant to excite the heart of Philemon to forgive Onesimus. And each one of his final remarks in those remaining verses carries in it the embryo of a truth that acts as motivation for us to forgive as well. What then motivates a person to forgive? Number one, the recognition that I owe a debt I can't pay. The recognition that I owe a debt I can't pay. Notice verse 19. I, Paul, am writing this with my own hand. I will repay it. Stop at that point for a moment. This is quite an interesting note. Paul's custom was to dictate his letters to an amanuensis or a secretary, somebody who wrote them down. But it was also Paul's custom at the end of many of his letters to pick up the quill and to sign his own name. For example, at the end of the letter to the Colossians, which would have been delivered at the same time Philemon was being delivered, you'll notice in chapter 4, verse 18, that epistle closes with this, I, Paul, write this greeting with my own hand. Remember my imprisonment. Grace be with you. Not unlike what you might do today were you to dictate a letter and have your secretary write it all down and then sign your name and add a P.S. in your own hand. It was common for the Apostle Paul to pick up the pen and write something with his own hand. Now, you will notice that he has said something very significant in verse 18. He said, if Onesimus has wronged you in any way or owes you anything, charge that to my account. This is the issue of restitution. Paul knows Onesimus has nothing. He can't repay what he stole. He can't repay the 500 denarii that Philemon had to spend to get someone to take Onesimus' place. He doesn't have that money. So Paul says, instead of trying to get it out of him, he doesn't have it, just charge it to my account. And then most interestingly, Paul says, I, Paul, am writing this with my own hand, I will repay it. And Paul picks up the pen and signs the IOU with his own name. That's what he's doing. I'm writing my own name with my own hand as a guarantee that if you'll put it on my account, I'll pay it. And he keeps the pen in hand from verse 19 to the end. And so the last number of verses here come from the Apostle Paul himself. So we have here not only what is from his inspired mind, but what is from his own hand as well. He is signing his name and saying, I will make restitution for Onesimus, who has no money. Obviously, Paul must have had some. You'll remember that he had received some gifts during his imprisonment. He notes them in Philippians chapter 2, verse 30, and chapter 4, verses 14 to 18, and says to the Philippian church, thank you for sending me some things, some money, some support in my imprisonment. So he had some resources. Perhaps he had enough to pay the debt. Paul is willing to do that. But then notice what he says in parentheses. Lest I should mention to you that you owe to me even your own self as well. What is he saying here? He's saying, by the way, I know Onesimus owes you a debt, but may I remind you that you owe me a greater debt than he owes you? Here's Paul's plan. Put his debt on my account. Then cancel it because you owe me so much. That's what he says. Now, there's a principle here. Philemon is not just a man who is owed the payment of a debt. Philemon is also a debtor who owes a far greater and unpayable debt to Paul. Onesimus owes Philemon a material debt. Philemon owes Paul a spiritual debt. Onesimus owes Philemon a temporal debt. Philemon owes Paul an eternal debt. Why? Paul had given him the gospel. Paul had led him to the saving knowledge of Jesus Christ. How is he ever going to pay that back? So he says, Onesimus' debt should be put on my account and then canceled because you owe me so much. Because I was used by God to deliver you from death and hell. Now, the principle is just that simple. Somebody does something against you, offends you, owes you something. Remember this. You owe such unpayable debts to others who have generously and graciously and faithfully and lovingly benefited you with the richest of spiritual blessings, and they don't demand payment, and neither could you pay it should they demand it. So can't you release the simple temporal financial debt or obligation of one who has only offended you in an earthly way? That's his point. Let me personalize it. I'm in debt to many people. I'm so deeply in debt to so many people for so much that I could never, ever come close to repaying it. I am in debt to my godly parents. I am in debt to my mother and father who led me to the knowledge of Jesus Christ. I am in debt to them for teaching me the scriptures. I'm in debt to them for leading me into ministry. I'm in debt to them for supporting me and supplying my needs and educating me. I'm in debt to them for holding me to a disciplined life and making me spiritually accountable for my behavior. I could never repay my debt to my parents. I'm in debt to my wife for her friendship, for her love, for her support, for her wisdom, her input, her correction, her convictions. I'm in debt to her. I could never repay the spiritual debt that I owe Patricia. I'm in debt to my children for loving me, even in my weaknesses. I'm in debt to my children for their kindness, for their concern, for their care, for their father, for their dutiful response to the things that I ask of them. I'm in debt to friends. I'm in debt to a whole world of friends who have ministered to me graciously and beneficially. I am in debt to my teachers. I am in debt to men who have written books, books that have shaped my life and my thinking and my ministry. I'm in debt to my co-workers and co-pastors. I'm in debt to you as a congregation because you have so consistently given me your prayers and your wisdom and your fellowship. And you even paid my wages for many years. I am so deeply in debt to so many people for so much spiritual blessing that I could never repay. Never. And I am so in debt to so many that only God can pay them back. Only God. And God will have to repay them all by giving them an eternal reward for all that they have sacrificed for me, because I can never pay them back. Can I then, who owe so much to so many, not forgive someone who owes a simple earthly debt to me? See Paul's point? Since I have so many spiritual debts that I can never repay, can I not allow gladly some material debt to go unpaid and fully forgive the one who owes it? So Paul, with his inspired genius, seeks to motivate us to forgive by reminding us of how much we owe. Second motivation, the recognition that I can become a blessing to others. If I forgive, I can become a blessing to others. Verse 20. Yes, brother. And there is that endearing kind-heartedness of Paul. Yes, brother, let me benefit from you in the Lord. Refresh my heart in Christ. And the words me and my are both emphatic in the Greek. He's saying, you have blessed so many. He already said that back in the first part of this wonderful book. Verse 7, he says, I have come to have much joy and comfort in your love because the hearts of the saints have been refreshed through you, brother. You have blessed so many people for so long. Now it's my turn, Paul says. Brother, let me be blessed. Let me profit. Let me benefit. Let me find spiritual usefulness. And this is a cognate of the very word Onesimus. So he's still using that play on words for the very name of Onesimus, which means beneficial or useful. It's my turn, he says. If you'll forgive him, you'll bless me. You'll benefit me. in the Lord. What does he mean by that? In the spiritual dimension, in the sphere of the spiritual. So let me benefit from you, from your action, from your act of forgiveness. Let me benefit from you receiving him, restoring him, and canceling his debt. That'll benefit me. How is it going to benefit Paul? Well, give him joy. Give him joy. As John the Apostle said, he had no greater joy than to hear that his children walked in love. Paul would say the same. I have no greater joy than to know that my children walk in love toward each other. You remember to the Philippians in chapter 2, those very wonderful words, chapter 2, verse 2, make my joy complete. How can we do that, Paul? How can we give you joy? By being of the same mind, maintaining the same love, united in spirit, intent on one purpose, not being selfish or conceited, but humble, regarding others more important, and looking on the things of others and not your own. In other words, Philemon, if you will humble yourself and consider Onesimus more important than yourself and seek unity and love and fellowship and therefore forgive that man, you will bring me joy. And so he's saying, you should be motivated by wanting to be a blessing to others. You should be motivated to forgive because it will rejoice the heart of another. So he says, let me benefit from you in the Lord, and then adds, refresh my heart in Christ. Again, in that spiritual sphere. Bless me, refresh me. You refreshed everybody else back in verse 7. Now it's my turn. The forgiveness of Onesimus by Philemon will bring spiritual joy and refreshment because Paul loves both those men. Paul wants them to be one. Paul loves the unity of the church. Paul wants Colossae as a church to see that forgiveness as a great example, an object lesson. If Philemon refuses to forgive Onesimus, it will burden the heart of Paul. It will sadden the heart of Paul. It will trouble the heart of Paul because he loves both those men and he loves that church and he loves the unity of the church. Any failure to forgive will injure that relationship. It will injure that church. It will mar its ministry and its effectiveness, and it will misrepresent the power of the gospel to the unconverted world that's watching. So he simply says, you've been willing to do so much refreshing for other people. Would you just do this for me? Would you forgive this man and refresh me and bless me and give me joy? Two good motives to forgive. You owe more than you can ever pay. And if you forgive, you'll bless the saints because you'll pursue unity. Third motive, the recognition that I am called to be obedient to the Lord. Verse 21, Paul says, having confidence in your obedience, I write to you, since I know that you will do even more than what I say. Again, with pen in hand, Paul says, look, I have confidence in your obedience. And he touches that heartstring again in Philemon that is plucked by the need to obey God. He's not talking about being obedient to Paul, because back in the early part of the chapter, you remember, Paul said to him, verse 8, I do have enough confidence in Christ to order you to do what is proper, yet for love's sake I rather appeal to you. So Paul never did command him. Paul is just saying, I know you'll obey the Lord in this. Paul is confident that Philemon is a godly man. He laid out his characteristics in verses 4 to 7. He is confident that he will act in a right way to obey God's command to forgive. Remember I told you that that theology of forgiveness is not in this letter, but we can assume Philemon knew it. We can assume Philemon was well acquainted with Matthew chapter 6, with the principle there that if you don't forgive your brother, God's not going to forgive you. He was very familiar with Matthew 18 principles, like you must forgive 70 times 7, or as Luke 17, 3 and 4 tells us, you must forgive if need be 7 times a day. He was well familiar with the Apostle Paul's conviction, 2 Corinthians 2:7, that forgiveness was essential. He certainly was sure of what Paul said in Ephesians 4:32 and Colossians 3:13, though he hadn't read them, that he must forgive because he had been forgiven so much. Philemon knew that God commanded forgiveness. Paul is sure he knew it. That's why he doesn't bring it up. And Paul is even sure he'll do it. He says, I'm confident of your obedience. I know you're going to do what God's commanded you to do, and God has commanded you to forgive. And so you're motivated not only because you owe debts you can't pay, not only because of what he says in verse 20, you'll be a blessing and a joy to other believers, but because you know God expects you to obey. And then he even says this in verse 21, I know you will do even more than what I say. Now, some people have made the unnecessary assumption that this is some call to Philemon to emancipate Onesimus, to free him from his slavery altogether, but that isn't indicated in the text. When he says, I know you will do even more than what I say, it could be that he is meaning to say, you will be more grand in your forgiveness than I've even asked. You will be more magnanimous in your love toward Onesimus than what I have even assumed. You will give to him maybe a prodigal son type of celebration. Put on the ring and the robe and kill the fatted calf and call a celebration. Maybe that's the more that he will do. Or maybe the more that he will do is to take him back not only as a servant, and Paul does indicate that he's coming back as a servant in verse 16 when he says you'll not only have him in the flesh, but in the Lord. In other words, he'll serve you in the flesh, he'll also serve you in the Lord. And maybe that is the more that he's thinking of here. Maybe the more is you're not only going to return him to menial service as a slave, but you're going to give him liberty to do ministry because of his spiritual capabilities. And so you'll do more than just take him back and restore him to service. You'll give him opportunity to minister alongside of you. Maybe the more might be that you'll not only forgive him, but you'll forgive some other people you ought to forgive. And the more is a more magnanimous, far-reaching, and broad kind of forgiveness in which Philemon will even forgive those that Paul doesn't know he holds bitterness against. There are many possibilities for what the more might be, but he says, I know your character, I'm confident in it, I know you'll obey, and you'll even do more than I've even asked. Voluntarily, without coercion, not because of law, not because of fear, but out of a righteous heart, Philemon will obey God who commanded him to forgive.
You're listening to Grace to You, featuring John MacArthur, president of the Master's College and Seminary. In today's lesson, John continued his look at Paul's letter to Philemon. Today's lesson, a part of the series simply titled, Forgiveness. John, the Bible clearly teaches that we should forgive someone who's betrayed our trust, but I'm wondering, is part of forgiveness restoring that trust? In other words, if you're going to forgive fully someone, do you need to also fully trust them?
Well, it's just not going to happen, Carl. You can certainly forgive, and you ought to forgive, and hold no grudge, no bitterness, no thought of vengeance, retaliation at all. You freely forgive a person. But no, you would be foolish to simply trust everyone who has received your forgiveness. They have to establish that trust all over again. Often, say, in talking to couples that are getting married, there's one thing you never want to violate. And that's trust. You may lie to one another in some small thing, but once you've breached trust and a spouse has learned that your word isn't good, then you elevate suspicion at every possible level. Then when you come home a half an hour late, the seed of thought is planted. Where was he? What was he doing? Never violate trust, because when trust is violated, it's easily broken, easily shattered in just one incident,
It takes a long time to reestablish trust. You can do that. Trust can be restored. We have to learn to trust someone. But when you have been mistreated, when you have plenty of reason not to trust someone, that there's a long, drawn-out process to regain that confidence and that trust. That's one of the key questions in the category of forgiveness. And I want to remind you that we're offering a free booklet called Answering the Hard Questions About Forgiveness. And we want to send this booklet free of charge to anyone contacting Grace to You for the first time. The question I just answered and many other questions are addressed and answered in this booklet, about a dozen questions in all, and they're very practical. The title again, Answering the Hard Questions About Forgiveness. You can call, write, or email your request today, or get your free copy at our website, gty.org. Again, Answering the Hard Questions About Forgiveness, free to anyone contacting us for the first time.
A friend, whether you're looking to strengthen your marriage, you're not sure how to respond to a friend who's wronged you, or you want to restore a broken relationship, this booklet can help by giving you a biblical understanding of forgiveness. To get your copy of Answering the Hard Questions About Forgiveness, free, if you've never contacted us before, please get in touch today. Mail your request to Grace to You, Post Office Box 4000, Panorama City, California, 91412. Or send us an email addressed to letters@gty.org. You can also let us know that you'd like a copy of Answering the Hard Questions About Forgiveness when you call the toll-free number 1-800-55-GRACE or by going to the website gty.org. Another reminder, for a limited time, nearly all of our resources here at Grace to You are on sale. You can get popular books like John's trio of titles, 12 Extraordinary Women, 12 Ordinary Men, and 12 Unlikely Heroes, as well as our flagship resource, the MacArthur Study Bible, all for 25% off the regular price. To see all that's on sale and to place your order, just call 1-800-55-GRACE or go to the website gty.org. The number again, 800-55-GRACE, or shop online at gty.org. Again, this sale is for a limited time, so place your order today. And now for John MacArthur and the entire staff, I'm your host, Carl Miller, thanking you for tuning in today and encouraging you to join us at this same time tomorrow for another half hour of Unleashing God's Truth, one verse at a time, on Grace to You. December 7th, 1941, a date that will live in infamy, and one that figures prominently into tomorrow's lesson on forgiveness. Don't miss it on the next Grace to You.